And now, Chapter 2 of The Forever Man. It was close to 5 p.m. on Friday afternoon when Director Johnson became aware that the room had grown darker. It'd been a bright sunny day, and the next day, Saturday, the new month would begin without him meeting his goal. He did not like to miss the mark when it came to achieving the benchmarks he set for himself, and he felt frustration building inside of him. He was sitting at his computer, reading his email, and mentally composing a note to his boss that would tell him the good news, 89 residents confirmed, and the bad news, 1 resident short. But don't worry, I will fill the slot next week. When the sun, in his west-facing windows, dimmed. He looked up in irritation, only to see the biggest human being he had ever encountered, standing in front of his desk, and he was so startled that he almost yelled in fright. He jumped to his feet and exclaimed, "How did you get in here?" The voice that answered was deep and powerful. "I came in the front door." "I assume that is probably how most people come in," the man said. Johnson looked up. Dark skin, long black hair, dark eyes, and a handsome face. The man was at least 7 feet tall and powerfully built. His dark eyes were penetrating. He wore his hair to his shoulders, and his face was unlined. He was dressed in a dark suit with a white shirt and a red and blue striped tie. His black shoes shone with a brightly polished effect, and his smile was broad. 2 suitcases were on the floor beside him. They looked ancient, and Johnson saw travel stickers all over them. "What can I do for you, mister?" "Call me Simon," the man said. "Is Simon your first or last name?" Johnson asked. "Just Simon will do." "I understand you have a room. I need a place to stay." "Well, Simon, I need a first and last name. Is your family in the area?" "I don't have a family. I am alone." "You do have a room, don't you?" the big man said. In his characteristic way, Director Johnson put on what he inwardly thought of as his friendly face and said, "Yes, but there are a number of things we need. There are forms to fill out, a background check, financial determinations, and a great deal more. This is not a hotel. People don't just walk in here off the street and expect to be accommodated." The big man smiled in return. "Perhaps this will help." He reached into his inside suit jacket pocket and pulled out a roll of bills. There must have been thousands of dollars in the roll. He placed the roll on Johnson's desk. "That should cover the initial cost." Ezra Johnson's eyes grew big. He had never seen so much paper money at one time. The roll was very large, and the bill on the outside was a $100 bill. Nevertheless, he had seen huge checks pass over his desk. Retirement homes were not cheap. The average stay cost a resident $75,000 per year for a semi-private room. A single room cost even more.
"Well, Mr. Simon, our residents don't pay with cash. Besides, you look quite healthy. You don't appear to be the age of the people here. Where'd you get all that cash? I hope you didn't rob a bank," Johnson said, laughing softly. The big man's face grew serious. "I'm much older than I appear, Mr. Johnson. As to my finances, I always pay in cash for everything. Banks don't interest me. I do not use credit cards. My cash goes where I go. I'm not a bank robber, and I find the idea offensive. I was told you have an opening. I'm here to fill it. From what I read, the average stay in such a facility is about 2 years. I will pay you in cash for 2 years right now. Is that acceptable?" For the first time in his life, Ezra Johnson was at a loss for words. He stared at the man. Finally, he said, "A private room at Madison Acres costs $82,000 annually. Do you intend to..." He did not finish his sentence. The big man reached down, opened one of the suitcases, and Johnson saw that it was stuffed full of $100 bills. They were bundled in paper wraps. He counted out 16 bundles, then peeled off $4,000 from the roll that he had placed on Johnson's desk, saying, "There, that should cover it." There was $10,000 in each bundle, $164,000 in all. Johnson was stunned. He stammered, But Mr. Simon, this is highly unusual. We can't accept just anyone. I mean, good heavens, how can I take this to a bank? They would want to know where I got such a huge amount of money. They keep track of large transactions. The government has rules. In fact, where did you get such a huge amount of money, and why don't you use a bank?" The huge man smiled. "I have lived a long time, Mr. Johnson, and I have been very frugal. I saved my money. I live simply. I have few needs other than to enjoy the company of others. I am at a place and time in my life where Madison Acres would be perfect for me. I'm sure you can overcome the small problem with the money. There are various ways you could deal with it, all of them legal and acceptable. Besides, you had one room to fill. You set your goal, and I'm here to help you meet it." Johnson's face showed his astonishment. "But how do you know about your goals?" "I know many things, Mr. Johnson. I know when the sun will rise and set. I know when the rain and snow will fall. I know the seasons and their rhythms. I know the smell of earth in spring and the beauty of the world he created. I know a great deal about people of all kinds, shapes, and sizes. I have lived all over the world. I travel endlessly. I speak many languages. And I have walked paths both safe and dangerous. I've seen love and hate, justice and inequality, compassion and brutality, suffering and death, and the hope that transcends all things. I was drawn here. I go where there are needs that are not stated, where there are wants that must be met, and where loneliness must not prevail. You are uncertain because you live a life that is orderly, and you are always in control. I respect that. The money is there. I fulfill your need. Your rooms will be fully occupied, and your superiors will be happy and satisfied. Does this meet with your approval?" Ezra Johnson stood mesmerized by the man's words. He had never heard such things said, not even in church by trained speakers. And he had a strange thought. The man reminded him of something he had read somewhere long ago, but he could not clearly recall what it was. He should tell the man to take his money and leave. But the truth was that his goal would be met, the rooms would be full, and this was the last day of the month. If he could tell his superiors of his accomplishment, it would be another feather in his cap, and his holiday bonus would be that much larger. "Do you have more possessions, Mr. Simon?" he asked the huge man. The man smiled again. "No, this is all I need. One bag for my money, and one for my clothing, and please just call me Simon." "What about your car?" "I don't have one." "But how do you get here?" "I walk," Simon said. "You walk? From where?" Johnson asked. "From the city named for brotherly love." "Good heavens, all the way from Philadelphia? Why didn't you take a bus or a car? You could have hitchhiked." "Look at me, Mr. Johnson. Who in their right mind in this world would pick up someone my size carrying two suitcases? I like to walk. It provides me time to think. This is highly unusual. However, we do have transportation here. The county provides buses that take our residents to various points. We do not allow cooking or small refrigerators in our suites, and all of our food is provided in our cafeteria. There are vending machines in our community room. Meals are at set times. The rules and regulations are in our handbook. The room we have available is a single room. It should be adequate for your needs. If you will allow me, I should put the money in the safe. I can put it into the system in smaller amounts and see that your monthly obligation is met. However, how am I to explain someone who has one name only? There are forms to fill out, addresses required, a social security number must be given, and do you have health insurance? Mr. Johnson, I'm sure the room is fine. If you must use a last name, use a name that you choose. If you have a name that you like, use it. I don't have a social security number. I just arrived here a few days ago from the other side of the world. I'm not an American. I was born elsewhere. I don't need insurance. I have money to pay for whatever is needed, Simon said. But how do I explain all this? Do you have a passport? Where did you come from? Africa. Before that, I was in Israel. I've lived in Asia, Europe, Indonesia, Australia, South America, and many other places. I travel the world constantly. I have an Israeli passport. Then you must have a last name. No, I do not. How's that possible? You must have an address in Israel, given the fact that you are an Israeli. The huge man reached into his suit jacket and brought forth a passport and handed it to the director. He opened it and saw that there was only one name, Simon. There was no address. He looked more closely at it. He had never seen so many international stamps in his life. The man had been everywhere. How do you get away with having one name? Simply put, I just do. From time to time, I must explain this to inspectors, but they seem to accept what I have to say. You can fill out the paperwork so that it satisfies your superiors. Now, could I see the room? I'd like to freshen up in time for dinner. Johnson handed the passport back to the man. I'll call my assistant, Helen Buchanan. She'll give you the tour and show you to your room. Thank you, Mr. Johnson. I appreciate your kindness. It's good to be here. I have traveled a long way to get here. Johnson reached across the desk and extended his hand. When Simon took Ezra's average-sized hand in his, the man's huge hand virtually swallowed his. He felt a strange, tingling warmth. It was a bit unnerving, and he released his grip quickly. Johnson picked up his phone and hit a button. Helen Buchanan appeared in the doorway a few moments later. She was dressed in a modest gray business suit with a white blouse, and her light brown hair was tied in a bun. A century before, she would have been called a spinster. She looked up at the big man, and she was amazed at his size. She wondered how he had gotten into Mr. Johnson's office without her having seen him. He would have had to walk past her desk in order to get into the room. Miss Buchanan, this is Mr. Simon. He's going to take our remaining room. Would you take him to his room and then give him a tour? Please make it brief because he wants to change for dinner. Thank you. Simon smiled at Miss Buchanan. She said, do you need help with your bags? No, it's no problem for me. I've carried a heavy burden many times. In fact, I once carried the heaviest burden ever borne. It was an incredible honor to do so. Both Johnson and Buchanan thought this was a strange thing to say. Ezra Johnson asked, what do you mean, Mr. Simon? You'll understand when the time is right, Mr. Johnson, Simon said and smiled. He picked up his bags, and Miss Buchanan led him into the hallway. They walked down the corridor and made a turn at the end.
Ezra Johnson watched them until they disappeared from sight. He had covered the money with file folders before his assistant had entered the office. Now he sat there looking at it. He had never seen so much cash at one time. It was impressive. For just a moment, he was tempted. But then, he reminded himself how badly things could turn out if someone made the wrong decision. He was not a religious man, and he never expected to be so. But he liked his job, and he wanted to keep it. He turned and dialed the combination to the safe, gathered up the money, placed it on one of the shelves, and locked the safe. He turned again to his computer. He composed an email to his superior. All rooms are filled. Sincerely, Ezra Johnson. It was time to go home. Fortune had smiled upon him once again. He looked forward to having a long conversation with Simon. The man must have a last name. He wanted to find out what it was.